If you've decided to chase that rabbit down that rabbit hole, found our link, clicked on it, and pressed play, then yes, you have found your destination. And that destination is the Raw Gypsy Not Quite Hippie Podcast. Well, hey there, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Raw Gypsy Not Quite Hippie Podcast. In today's episode, I'm going to get to interview Mr. Chris Kendall. For those of y'all that are in the social media outlets, for those of y'all in social media, you'll better know him as the Raw Advantage or the Banana Commander. This guy is an absolute treasure of information. He's 15 years plus being a raw vegan. He lives up in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. He's a registered holistic nutritionist, a yoga teacher. He's a hell of an athlete, absolutely incredible athlete, an avid skateboarder. He's also a raw food lifestyle coach. He's a speaker that comes to all of the fruit festivals, the major fruit festivals. He's an invited speaker for those and any kind of raw food summit, holistic nutritional summits. And at these fruit festivals, he's their main chef, their raw food chef. So yeah, he's just an absolute treasure of information. He was mentored by Dr. Doug Graham, who is, of course, the 80-10-10 raw vegan champion. And yeah, what a mentor to have. Those two together have come together and, you know, put out raw food recipe books. Chris himself has one of the coolest names, 100 Frickin' Raw Recipes. I mean, you can't ask for a better name for a book than that. But yeah, just an absolute cool cat. And we're going to get a chance to talk to him. So let's bring him in. Let's pick his brain a little bit and see what makes this guy tick. Can't wait to talk to him. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another podcast of the Raw Gypsy Not Quite Hippie. I happen to have Chris Kendall, the Raw Advantage, in the house. Chris, how in the hell are you, brother?
I'm doing pretty damn awesome, man. Stoked to be on here. Thanks for inviting me.
You are more than welcome, my friend. When I sent the invitation out and you said yes, it was a little bit of a fanboy action going on, man. I'm super pumped to have you on, my friend.
I'm so blessed, man. It's always a pleasure to connect. You know, you're doing an awesome thing, and I couldn't say no. You know, the call of the wild's there, and you got to spread the sweet info, you know?
I love it, man. Your attitude is it's infectious, brother. It's infectious. Well, before we get started, my friend, we have a little thing called the hot seat, so I'm going to put you in the hot seat and ask you four questions.
Okay, sounds good.
And with those four questions, I just ask that you answer them as quickly and as honestly as possible right off the top of your noggin, my friend.
Sounds good to me.
All right. If you could be any inanimate object with a conscious and be able to observe any inanimate object, what would it be?
I guess a tree isn't an inanimate object, is it? So I'd say a rock, like a stone, just in an awesome spot.
Just soaking it in.
Yeah, just soaking it all in. I mean, either that or something like the moon, so you could just be out in space and chilling. But I think that's a big rock too, so.
No, the moon, that's perfect. No, that's perfect. Oh, the view.
Yeah, the view would be amazing. You'd be out there and watch the world change and, you know, have people come step on you for the first time. Be like, whoa, this is crazy, you know?
Wow. Awesome. All right, buddy. Number two, if you had the opportunity to speak and your words would be heard by everyone or recorded so that everyone could hear at a later time, these are your last words before you pass away, what would they be?
Oh, man. Love yourself, you know, love each other like you would wish you'd love yourself.
Love it. Love yourself. And that, you know, that's so important, my friend. It's and not many people, I think you get that phrase gets thrown around a lot. But you know what? Not a lot of people do that.
No, it's true, man. It's true. And I mean, to me, I recognize, I mean, I don't want to jump ahead. I'll just say a short bit. We can go on into it a bit more if you like. But there was a time where I recognized I really did not love myself and my life was in a pit. It was horrid, you know, and I didn't want to exist anymore. And I started treating myself as if I loved myself. I started feeding myself God's love, food, you know, fruit, all the piranhas in one, and it started making me feel like I was loved, and started loving myself and growing in love more and more and more. And I thank every day that I found this lifestyle, because it's made all the difference and turned a lot of things around for me.
Wow. You know, how can you love and care for others if you can't love and care for yourself?
Absolutely. It's going to be, to a big degree, the delimiting factor of what you can actually put out, and, you know, what kind of love you can hold for someone else.
Wow. Nice. Awesome, brother. I knew you would answer that one. A deep thought. I love it. I love it. Number three, for the sake of argument, reincarnation exists. Who were you in a former life?
Who wasn't I? I've had so many people. I know it. I have a mean streak for East Indian food, and actually Japanese. I've had past life kind of experiences with Japanese past lives. Doing some mirror gazing, I've seen some different faces and some animals and stuff like that. So, yeah, I don't have any specifics. I have some friends who actually, they have some specifics of who they may have been, but just different people from different places and different faces, different times, but nothing specific for me.
Wow. Yeah. You know, I haven't really thought about that either, of who I would be. My musical, this is probably going off on a tangent, but my musical taste is so crazy. It's all over the place. I kind of feel like I would be the same way in this, my gypsy blood or lifestyle that I like and that I love. I wouldn't be surprised if the same folds for me too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the same for all of us. I mean, I do believe in reincarnation, and I think we're here to experience everything there possibly is and come back quenched to spirit, you know, but, I think the taste of life and the taste of this physical existence always draws us back, because it's obviously different than the spirit realm. So, but it's a pretty fun, interesting question for sure.
Yes. All right, brother. Well, number four is a would you rather question.
I love those.
Would you rather? I love them too. Would you rather be able to change the past or see into the future?
Ooh, you know, truthfully, I don't think I'd want either. If I have to answer, that's really tough. Because, I mean, there are like almost nothing I want to change. There's like really one silly thing that I wouldn't mind. And seeing into the future, I think that's pretty dangerous too. Can I take I'd rather do neither. You know, I mean, I don't know. And the tough thing is, like, seeing into the future, you could potentially do a lot of good, but you know, you also could have a lot of challenges in warding off like the opportunity to use that for your own self gain, and so that'd be really challenging, I think. Maybe the past, but no, I don't know, dude. That's really tough. How about you? What would you pick?
I would choose to be able to see into the future. That's a tough one too. I don't know that I would change anything. Of course, the temptation to change events that are coming up into the future, you know, foreseeable future, but I believe this is a little odd, but I've been told this before, that I'm slightly sensitive or highly sensitive, and I don't mean that in an emotional way. Mm-hmm. It's more of a, I can sense things that are a little odd or strange, and also, funny thing is, side note, my mother had passed away in 2014, and my father had, I had dreamt that my father had met a lady. This is after my mother had passed away, after she had passed. And he had met a lady. I saw her face. Her name was Barbara. Mm-hmm. I saw her house. We had a potluck or something in her kitchen. I knew her. I saw her kitchen. She had an island in the kitchen. I saw the cabinets. I knew the color of the cabinets, everything. Like a few months later, my dad tells me, or actually my wife, she says, I told my wife about the dream. Mm-hmm. And this is like 2 or 3 months later. And she says, "Hey Trey, I think I found Barbara." And I said, "What?" And she said, "Yeah, look at this." And my dad had just recently started dating this lady named Barbara, and she looked exactly like her. And I told my dad about it, and he said, you know, he thought that was crazy. And I said, I even know her kitchen. And he said, well, describe her kitchen. So I described the kitchen, and he said, that island was just put in last week.
That's so awesome, man. I totally believe, I've heard stories like that and have had smaller incidences myself, but those are awesome things to hear.
But being able to, I know it's crazy, but being able to see into the future is, I think that would be pretty neat. I don't know that I would change the past either. No. The past is what it is. It makes you who you are. And so, yeah.
You know, I think seeing into the future, I think the temptation would be so large that you'd pretty much have to be a Buddha or a Jesus to let it go. Like seeing a step back and seeing the bigger picture and the perfection. I think most of us would want to do something about it, you know.
True. Very true. Very true. Very true. Well, good deal, man. That was that's the hot seat, brother. And I knew that you would come through. I try to pick questions that relate strictly to the guests and not the same ones over and over again. So I that's why I picked those for you.
Perfect. Yeah, you don't want to be too prepared. Especially for a hot seat. Exactly. It's got to be hot.
It's got to be a little warm.
Yeah.
Well, that's good, man. So today, what's Chris Kendall got going on today?
Well, let's see. What did I do? You know, woke up, took it a little bit easy and stayed in bed a little longer because nothing was on my schedule important, and just cuddled with my girlfriend, Camilla. And then got up and did a little bit of computer work. It's been a busy few weeks. You know, it's getting close to festival time and just wrapping things up, getting food orders together and, you know, making sure the outlines of talks look good, and then just, you know, regular website and blog and all that kind of stuff. I dropped off my girlfriend to the hospital for a rehabilitation appointment, and I went skateboarding for an hour, did a bit of yoga in the grass. I went to a local auction and I got like 10 watermelons for $2 each, and a bunch of greens and a bunch of other stuff. Then I picked up my girlfriend and we went to the grocery store and picked up tons of bananas and a couple other little knickknacks and made it home, made a big watermelon smoothie, and now I'm here talking to you.
Sweet. Epic, man. So your bananas there in where exactly are you in Canada?
So I'm in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. So it's just left of center of the country. I like to call it the heart of Canada, you know, just a little left. And been here born and raised since 1980, although basically since 97, I've been a bit of a nomad, a bit of a gypsy myself, you know?
Hell yeah. That's what I'm talking about. So the bananas up there in Saskatchewan, how are they, what's the price of them?
You know, on average, they're 79 cents to 99 cents a pound. But I can sometimes get them for much less, like 50 cents a pound or even less at the auction. I'm really lucky there is an auction house out here that gets overflow produce from some of the co-ops. And if the co-ops aren't going to take it, then they just bring it to the auction house and they sell it out cheap. Like sometimes crazy cheap and sometimes not so crazy cheap. Like bananas, I've got them for $5 a case organic, but typically they're about $15 a case. And I've gotten crazy deals. Like one time I got 75 organic avocados for $5, you know. So it's kind of hit or miss. They come 3 times a week and I try and check it out and get my my bulk of the stuff from there, but otherwise, you know, the fruit here is actually pretty darn good. I was just saying the other day that I think very truthfully that the mango season I've had here in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan was better than any mango season I've had anywhere in the world, including being in the tropics during the height of mango season multiple times. So I'm getting pretty darn good produce out here and really thankful for it.
And they're grown locally there?
No. The bananas, mangoes, most of the ones that I've been getting are from Mexico. This year I splurged a little bit and got some extra fancy mangoes from India and from Pakistan during the height of their mango season. But those were a little bit more expensive, so I didn't get more than kind of the treats of those.
Right. I didn't think they had mangoes up there, but shoot, you never know.
Yeah, well, you know, I actually had a local papaya last fall that was grown in a greenhouse out here. And I do know that, I mean, people were growing some bananas in BC in greenhouses. And I mean, you can do it. I mean, ultimately, I think that's going to be one of the futures to come, is having, you know, biodomes that are different microclimates and have them powered off of thermal, geothermal, solar, wind, whatever it may be. So they're totally green, little teeny habitats inside these bubbles where they can grow any kind of food you want. And then you don't really have to rely on the shipping, or, I mean, otherwise just have green, green energy. So the shipping isn't even an issue except for the time frame that it takes to get here. But for now, the way it is, it's pretty darn good. We're blessed. I feel like we're back in the garden, man.
It's perfect. Perfect. Well, it could be perfect. The biodome scenario is absolutely stunning. I would so love to see
too.
That.
One day I wouldn't mind living in one. You know, it'd be cool to have a couple of them, you know, have the temperate, the subtropical, and the tropical, and a couple other microclimates, but be able to grow basically anything. And if every single city had one of those, you know, it'd just grow amazing quality fresh food and probably be the most oxygenated, amazing place to stand and be in as well.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I had never heard of, you mentioned auction house. I'd never heard of an auction for fruit. That's fascinating. Mm-hmm. Fascinating. All right. Well, you know what, brother, your story is an awesome one. I've heard it several times, and if you could give a brief description of your lifestyle, your 80-10-10, what that entails. I know you follow the 80-10-10 raw diet and have been for what, 15 plus years. Yeah. So if you could, yeah, just tell us how you got to that point and what it entails.
Okay, sounds great. Well, you know, I mean, I generally like to start when I was about 5 years old. I started skateboarding and it basically became my world. You know, I felt like I was saving the planet somehow skateboarding, and whatever my skateboard told me, I did. And eventually when I was about 18 and living on my own, drinking almost every single day, and that's not green juices, that's like beer or anything I could get my hands on, smoking cigarettes and, you know, eating fast food and pizzas basically every day, all day, I fell into depression and just my joints hurt. I wasn't skateboarding well. I felt like my dream of becoming a professional is getting further and further away. And I didn't really want to live anymore. I remember going to bed every night wishing I wouldn't wake up. And I knew I needed a change. And the first thing that I really found was yoga VHS tape from Walmart, and that shook me. You know, it was like really changed a lot of things. I started seeing, you know, calmness and breath and being centered, and your nutrition and all that stuff as being integral to your well-being. And before that, I just really thought that food was just, you know, like whatever, just eat whatever tastes good and that's it. But that sparked an interest in nutrition and in philosophy and in karma, and started really researching a heck of a lot more. The first big book I read on nutrition was called Fit for Life, and that outlined some concepts of like food combining and, you know, being vegan, vegetarian, raw food, the importance of holistics. And I really took it all on, you know, started eating fruit for breakfast and started researching more, started food combining, started moving away from processed foods and animal products. And over about a 5-year period of time, 4 or 5 years, I went from, you know, drinking, smoking and eating whatever I possibly could get my hands on to basically being a high raw vegan. And it was at that time I also went to a school called CSNN, the Canadian School of Natural Nutrition. And I was 6 months into my schooling and also 6 months into my high raw vegan kind of diet, basically eating fruit for breakfast, fruit for lunch, and then a big simple cooked dinner of like sweet potatoes and broccoli and stuff like that. And about 6 months in, I went to a vegan health festival and met Dr. Doug Graham, who's actually the creator of the 80-10-10 diet. Although at that time, he hadn't finished writing it yet. It came out about 3 or 4 years later. And, you know, when I met him and when I seen him on stage, there was just something about him. He was literally glowing, you know, that unshakable kind of exuding health was kind of radiating it off of him. And maybe it was also just because I was meeting someone who was going to point me towards, you know, my path, you know, that it just really struck a deep chord within me. And I spent as much time with him as I could that day. That night I went 100% raw. And the next day I remember just walking down the street, feeling so connected to myself and so connected to others. You know, you could call it a Satori moment or a major heart opening, but my entire paradigm shifted at that point, because before then, you know, I'd been really, really nose down reading tons of nutrition books and studying it. I was in school and all this stuff, but all of it was for my own benefit. I just wanted to be able to heal faster and feel better and more energetic so I could just chuck myself down sets of stairs and skateboard and try and become a professional. And within the first day of going raw, literally, I just felt like, oh my God, this is why I'm here. I want to share this. I want to share, you know, how good it feels to feel the way I do right now. And the reality that we don't need to be harming other living beings and that we can live more harmonious on this planet, you know? And I just remember tears flowing down my face and just feeling so much gratitude. And I went and met Doug again, talked to him, and, you know, I never really looked back, you know, beyond a few bumps along the road and some common transitional kind of, you know, sidetracks. But, you know, for the first 5 years I was raw, I focused really on simple hygienic eating. And if people don't know what that means, essentially what it means is I only really ate from foods that you would, one, feed a baby, two, that you could make a meal out of it and digest it well, or three, that, you know, you could feed an elderly person as well, right? So it was basically fruit and young tender greens. I didn't have an onion or a garlic or hot peppers or spices, even just cinnamon, actually, and carob powder for about 5 years. And at that time, I went through an intense breakup and decided to start the Raw Advantage, you know. So that's now 10 years ago, and I've been ever since just writing recipe books, and I've expanded upon that. I've included some non-hygienic items to, you know, make more transitional food, as well as kind of bridge the gap between super simple hygienic and the more common high-fat kind of raw gourmet that's at restaurants and stuff. And I've just been growing with that, you know, chefing at festivals and retreats and teaching yoga and writing recipe books and making YouTube videos. It's been a decade. I've been typically making about a video every week. So it's been a pretty crazy journey.
Wow. Wow. So how old were you when you first, when you got the yoga tape at Walmart, which I find absolutely, absolutely hilarious. A yoga VHS. I love it. So how old were you when you found that? And then before you met Doug?
I would have been, I think, 19 at that time. I would have been like 99. So yeah, I guess that's about 20 years ago. And I met Doug in, was it 2003 or 4? Maybe it was 4 or 5, actually. I'd have to look. I've these things written down, but it all becomes a little bit of a blur. So yeah, I think it was the summer of 2004 that I met Doug, and yeah, the rest is history since then. And it's awesome now. I mean, me and him are close friends and, colleagues, you know, we've co-written a recipe book together and speak at the same festivals and stuff. He's like Papa Doug now. It's pretty awesome.
And that's awesome, man. What a great mentor to have, Doug Graham. I mean, the guy's incredible. He's incredible.
Absolutely. And, you know, go ahead.
And he's a hell of an athlete.
Yeah, he's inspiring to say the very least. I mean, I've told him before, you know, because I've been to his health and fitness week and I've been to some of his other retreats. And, you know, at his health and fitness week, we were working out the opportunity to work out 3 sessions, 2 hours each session every day. And I did that. I did every single workout session and, you know, it was very, very challenging. But, you know, one of the things too is that there's different tiers, you know, like the A tier, B tier, C tier. And I was in the A tier because Doug was teaching it every time. He'd teach the hardest classes. And still, you know, he was at that time probably like, this is, I think, 7 years ago or something. Or actually, no, it was like 9 years ago, 8, 9 years ago. And he was probably just approaching 60 and I was in my low 30s and he could still beat me at freaking everything except for one competition we did. I beat him. But I've recently kind of told him, you know, it's going to be sad because by the time I can beat you at athletic endeavors, I shouldn't really feel good about it, you know? So.
Oh, wow. That is so true. That's funny. But hey, you know what? I think you had posted something. It's been a couple of weeks ago where it said, I may be paraphrasing, but it said, I want to die young, but later.
You know, I don't know if I did, but I like that. I definitely like that.
I thought it was something that you had posted, and it was something about everybody wants to die young, but later, or at a later date.
I like that.
And it's so, yeah, it's so true, my friend. You know, you, the the trick is to stay young and stay young at heart and as young as you can. I'm 47 years old, but my brain, I feel that everybody has a time back in their past that they still feel at that age, you know, even whether you're 80 years old, 40 years old or whatever, there is a time, an age that you still feel like you are in your mind. And I still feel like I'm 16 and I feel like I'm 16 years old.
Yeah, I love it, man. I feel the exact same way. And I think, you know, so much of it is attitude and whether we let the world beat us down or whether we just, you know, wipe it off and get back up and smile big and live from the heart.
Well, yoga, spirituality and, you know, holistic nutrition. And of course your diet, your raw diet is so, you know, instilled in your soul. Talk to me about, we're going to go through each one, but talk to me about yoga, man. Why did it grab you so hard and what does it do for you? What does it mean to you? Talk about yoga.
Well, yoga to me is just, is my happy place. It brings me right back to center, right back. It was really for me the gateway into meditative living, you know, because to me, you know, we can make meditation out of everything, but yoga is what allowed me to actually come into meditation in the first place. Just calming down, you know, breathing with my movements and just kind of yoking into the reality of the now, you know, and beyond that, it also definitely dives into philosophy and different ways of thought and different ways of being and just kind of, it's like a step back, you know, kind of sitting back into yourself rather than being completely into your experience is watching and enjoying it. And yeah, it's also a way to connect physicality with breath and with spirituality. So it's a great union as yoga is called to yoke, right? It's a unifying process.
Yeah. Did that VHS that you had in the past that you picked up, first of all, do you still have it? And second, has anything changed? Have you learned any, you know, has much changed from that time frame that a VHS was made as to what, you know, what yoga is now?
Well, I mean, I guess it would depend upon if you mean like what yoga is to me now or what yoga is, you know, in the West now.
Yes. What yoga is to you.
Yeah. Now. You know, I mean, truthfully, when I first started it was, you know, it was an intermediate hatha yoga. So it was like, and it's kind of like power hatha. So it was like a fitness yoga. And while it did get me to kind of calm down and, you know, just breathe deeply and move with my breath rather than the other way around, it was kind of, again, more kind of athlete focused. And since then, I've done a lot of different styles of yoga. One of my favorites is Kundalini yoga, which is definitely more of an energetic practice and to really watch your own energy and cultivate energy. So, I mean, to me, it's just gotten a lot deeper than just, you know, physicality. And I mean, again, while it did in the beginning, right from the beginning, it did touch upon kind of the meditative aspects. It wasn't quite as conscious as it was for me now, or as it has become, you know. In the beginning, it was just, you know, kind of a piece and parcel of the activity itself. And looking back, I see it much more clearly than when I was actually there in the first place. But I also, I don't have the VHS tape anymore. Actually, I think it probably got lost or something when I was living in Alberta. And so unfortunately I don't have it anymore.
That's a bummer. That'd be cool to have, man. Just to, you know, just to have it to reflect back on.
Totally.
So, with your spirituality, and I know you talk on that a lot. Tell me about the importance of spirituality to you and how does it affect your day to day and how you see the world and of course life in general.
I mean, to me, spirituality is just a steady point. It's something to always come back to. To me, spirituality is kind of taking the steps back, you know, and seeing the bigger picture and recognizing that everything is indeed perfect as it is. You know, it's just when we're close up, sometimes we don't see the path. We don't see why we're going through the things we're going through. But with that wider view, with that spiritual view of perfection, just that perfection is a process rather than an end point. We're just in the middle of the process and we can't see the end and we don't know exactly what's happening. But if we have that spiritual stable point, that spiritual backbone, then, you know, we can become more grounded, more relaxed, and more in gratitude no matter what we're going through.
And connected. I feel like spirituality to me is a connection to to everything, and it's energy, and it's, and if you don't, and I've told this, I've said this before, if you don't think that we're energetic beings, I mean, our hearts run on electricity, mm-hmm. pretty much. It's an electric cell that is fired to cause the heart to beat. It's electrical activity. So it is definitely energy, and I believe we're all connected. You know, there's, what's the old story about the aspen trees? They're all connected in mm-hmm. one, you know, and I don't think that we're much different than that. I really don't.
No, I 100% agree. And I think that's part of it. When you step back and you recognize that we are all one, and you know, hurting another person is hurting yourself, and hurting yourself is hurting everyone else, you know, and you know, it leads you back to just love and wanting to live as simply and happily and connected as possible.
Sure. Absolutely. And now I'm going to delve off into something that I absolutely love, and I'm still a baby at it, but, I'm kind of a nerd when it comes to anatomy, physiology, the way that, you know, the body works, and everything that has to do with health and nutrition. I am a complete nerd when it comes to that. And holistic nutrition, I know that you went to school for it. So talk about holistic nutrition, the importance of it in your daily life.
Awesome. You know, I mean, to me, just the epitome of holistics and holistic nutrition is the recognition that everything is more than the sum of its parts, you know, that, you know, our well-being and happiness is determined by so many factors that we can't just single out one and think that that is the key. You know, anytime someone says, well, you know, diet is the key to everything. You know, when I first got into raw food, I really did think like, if I just get this raw food right, then everything is going to be perfect. But, you know, holistics instead shows that every single aspect of health, every single lifestyle aspect is just as important as the other. It's just recognizing how far off base we are with each of them and starting with the weakest links, you know? So diet is a huge one, but it's no more important than getting adequate sleep. If you don't get sleep, you're going to fall apart faster than if you didn't get an adequate diet. And the same with breath. I mean, if you're not breathing correctly, you're going to experience ill health. And in fact, if you stop breathing, you're going to die pretty damn quick. You know, it's, in some ways, you could say it's more important than food, but in reality as well, it's just one spoke on the wheel of health. You know, relationships, sense of purpose, emotional well-being, you know, quality water, sunshine, you know, all of these things are vastly important. And it's just, you know, not an overwhelming, oh my God, I got to fix every single lifestyle aspect, but having an overall wider view that all of those things are important. And, you know, there's always different things we can shift our focus to and feel gratitude for, and see what we can actually do in the moment that can enrich us. Because, you know, we may be in a situation like our first winter raw and be devastated and stressed out thinking, oh my God, I'm not getting the best food, or it's shipped from far away, or this or that. And, you know, at the end of the day, if we just do the best we can with food and then let it go and focus on all the other aspects of health and health creation and holistics, and, you know, test our passion and, you know, test our relationships and, you know, go into different aspects of living that can also bring us energy and bring us gratitude, then everything shifts.
Yes. Yeah, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that. And when we talk about the mind can do so much good and damage to you. The night that we found out that my mother had cancer, we originally thought that she was having a gallbladder attack. And my sister called and said that they found a mass. Chris, immediately, within seconds, a wave of nausea come over me, and I literally had to run to the bathroom and throw up.
Yikes.
Now, that is not I didn't have a virus. I didn't get food poisoning. You know, I was fine, and I heard news, and I threw up. And I know that's simplistic, but I'm trying to simplify it by saying that your brain, your mind can do so much good and damage to you. So it's very important to be self-centered. I mean, not self-centered, to be centered. Sorry about that. Now, to be centered and to be in touch and like you said, you know, breathing, sunlight, sleep, these are all very, very important things to and nutrition is just one of them. You know, nutrition is just one of them.
Absolutely. You know what I mean? It does just go back to focusing on your weakest links first. And, you know, when you can't tweak that anymore, okay, we'll let it go for now and enjoy the ride, enjoy the experience, and let's look at the other aspects, you know. And it's I think it's just a continual growth. I think that's the fun thing with holistic health is there's no end point. It's just, you know, continually looking at all the aspects of health and health creation and just natural living that give us natural joy as well. I mean, that's the beautiful thing about all these things, whether it's diet or whether it's sleep or whether it's breath or whether it's sunshine or whether it's, you know, good quality water or whether it's love and loving relationships, you know, they feel amazing when you feel aligned with them, you know? And so it just becomes a practice of more conscious living and a practice of observing the things that bring you the most joy, not only in the immediate right now, but also in the day, week, month later, you know, and cultivating those habits that get you to where you want to go. And most of us, you know, where we want to go is to higher levels of health, happiness, fitness, contentment, you know. So to me, that's the role of holistic health, and the holistics is to look at the bigger picture and just be more conscious, more in the moment with also the plan to be cultivating, you know, health and happiness and joy and connection and love.
Yeah. And you know, that, like you said, that you focus on trying to focus on everything at one time, it could be overwhelming for some. I love what you just said. Concentrate on the weakest link first and see if we can get that fixed. You know, that's profound.
For sure. You know, I mean, I coach lots and lots of people, and, you know, sometimes people, I've been coaching them a little bit and we talk about a few things, and, you know, they're like, yeah, my diet's good, this and that, but I'm not getting the results. And, you know, they're sleeping 3 hours a night. And, you know, until you figure out your sleep, you're never going to achieve high levels of health or as high as you possibly can, you know, and that would be the weakest link there. If you're, you know, eating a raw food diet, primarily raw, or even just a vegan diet with tons of whole food, but you're not sleeping, well, stop thinking about diet and move over towards sleep and stress. What can you do to alleviate stress? What can you do to, you know, keep your mind from going wild? Because that's the number one reason why people don't sleep, is they're overthinking, you know. And until you focus on those links, you know, your experience is going to be limited by them.
And listen to your body. And listen to your
absolutely
body, you know, and listen to it. Yeah. You know, wow. The simplest answer, that's crazy. It's crazy that we don't come up with the answer, and it's the simplest one.
Almost, you know? Every time, that's, you know, like, nature is simple, but it is so complex. But, you know, nature's laws, they, you know, you can't really break them, you know. they're pretty simple and they're pretty straightforward, but a lot of times people want either A, the quick fix, or they want something to be really intellectual. And, you know, some people bring out much intellectual answers, and, you know, while they obviously have its place, simplicity is nature's design.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you try to break nature's law, it's usually when something goes wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's usually when your check engine light comes on and, you know, yeah.
Nature breaks you. That's what I've heard before. You can't break the laws of nature. Nature breaks you.
That is 100% accurate. 100% accurate. So you are a chef. You know, I didn't realize that. I mean, I knew that you have incredible creations. I knew that. I've seen it. It's incredible. But I had never really put that you were a chef. And you know, you talked about you're a chef, and I feel kind of dumb now saying, you know, oh, you know, I should have known he was a chef. So how long, when you were, since you're a chef, were you always into creating good food and things like that when you were younger too, or did this just come about fairly recently?
Yeah, no, you know, I mean, since I remember, like, before I moved out, even I loved making food. And when I moved out, I was responsible for making all my own food. And I was kind of a ghetto chef at that time, because it was mostly from processed foods and condiments and different stuff like that. But as I, you know, went on to my more healthy whole food kind of based journey, I started making even more things because I had to make them from scratch. And I really, really enjoyed it. And in fact, in the 2 years before I went into holistic nutrition, chefing and making food was even a bigger passion. And I was looking originally for vegan and vegetarian chefing schools, but I couldn't find any that wouldn't, you know, that would basically allow you to be vegan and do the whole curriculum. Like, you still had to either taste meat or make food with meat and different animal products, which I didn't want to do. So my secondary option was the holistic nutrition course. And, you know, when I started my website, within the first month of starting my website, I wrote my first book, 101 Frickin' Rawsome Recipes, which are, essentially just, you know, simple, hygienic, 1 to 5 ingredient, well food combined recipes that you can get, you know, with, you know, ingredients from almost anywhere, any normal grocery store. And, you know, I made that and it had a really good response. And not that long after, I was contacted by somebody who I had consulted in the past about the Woodstock Fruit Festival. And that was, and, you know, they invited me on to be the chef. And, you know, I mean, I hadn't worked outwardly as a chef, but I had made food, of course, for friends and family and, you know, wrote a recipe book. And that was my first big chefing experience, was all of a sudden thrown into a kitchen. They didn't even ask me to bring recipes. They didn't ask me what I wanted to be ordered. I just showed up. They had boxes and boxes and boxes full of fruits and vegetables. And they said, oh, here's like 10 people, make food. And so, you know, made 3 meals a day for, or rather really focused on dinner, but served food all day and then dinner for a week. And ever since then I've, you know, been the head chef of lots of festivals all over the world and written, I think, 8 or 9 more recipe books, and I'm continually growing in that field.
Wow. And the food combining, I told you we'd get back to the food combining, brother. Please give me some tips, or give the audience some tips on food combining. What do we need to look for and what do we need to stay away from?
Okay, perfect. So, you know, food combining is really just a way to optimize digestion. And I like to put it out there as a tool rather than a rule. And also recognizing that it's not totally black and white. It's not like, you know, some books or some people would have you believe that if you, you know, for example, mix mangoes and, or sorry, tomatoes and dates, that your body's just going to explode. You know, like there are tendencies, you know, and the other aspect of it is that it does come down to amounts. So like, yeah, tomatoes, which are an acid fruit, and dates, which are a dried fruit, they typically don't digest very well together. And a lot of people have issues with them. And if you were to make like a 50-50 mix of tomatoes and dates, you'd probably burp up a lot, have some fermentation and a lot of farts and not feel so great. But if you have a big tomato sauce and you add 2 dates to it to sweeten it a little bit, very likely you're not going to notice anything, except maybe a few very sensitive people, you know, if they're really, really strict with food combining forever, you know. But
right. I was gonna ask about the tomato sauce, because I think one of I had made a rocky, and my sauce was a marinara type sauce, and I had to add dates with, of course, the tomatoes and the sun-dried tomatoes and whatnot, and I didn't realize that that was an issue.
Yeah, I mean, and like I said, I mean, it all depends. Like, some, when I first started food combining, I took it as law. I really did, and I took it like to a T. Like, I had to do it, so much so that when I saw people eating foods that didn't combine well according to food combining, I would get a stomachache watching them do it, and I'm not even kidding. And I mean, I food combined to a T for 5 years, you know, and then after that, I started experimenting and feeling where my boundaries were. And if I noticed any, you know, digestive upset or more gas, or just didn't feel as good in my body, because, you know, at the end of the day, people always say we are what we eat, but the reality is we are what we absorb. So we can eat the best quality ingredients in the world, but if they're mixed together in such a way that they're not going to digest very well, well, it's going to take longer to digest. We're just going to digest less efficiently. We're going to get less from it. And it's also going to have some byproducts of fermentation that our body then has to deal with, and can cause the body, or can cause the food to even go out of the body quicker because it wants to get rid of it. So you digest less as well. So food combining is just a means of simplifying the way you put foods together into similarities in water content, and often similarities in taste. So for example, the super basic precepts of food combining as pertains to raw food, because it gets a little different when you get into cooked food, is when we're talking about greens, like, you know, tender, young, leafy greens, they digest well with everything, anything and everything. Otherwise, we separate fruits into 4 categories, one being melons, which is pretty self-descriptive. The second being acid fruit, which is typically anything with a tart bite. Lemons, limes, pineapples, kiwis, and so on. And then we have subacid, which is any of those temperate fruits with a pit, like peaches, nectarines, apricots, cherries, but then also juicy sweet fruit like mangoes and papayas, grapes fall into the subacid. And interestingly enough, too, also a lot of the subacid grows in the subtropical areas. And then we go on to sweet fruits. And the sweet fruits, of course, are like bananas and mamays and persimmons and dates and figs and let's see, a couple other ones, jackfruit. And durian is a sweet fruit, but it's also fatty. And I guess we also could say we have fatty fruits on the other side too. But the basis of food combining for fruit is, again, that greens combine well with everything, and that fruits combine best either with other fruits in their own category or one category beside it. So, for example, the sweet fruit combines better with subacid than it would with acid or melon. Melon combines pretty well with itself or with acid, but not super good with subacid. And subacid typically is kind of the universal, where it pretty much could go everywhere, mixed with anything, although it's not as great with the melon, at least not in large, like 50-50 quantities. Other than that, you get like starchy vegetables and stuff like that, which combines better with greens, combines okay with acid fruit, and okay with a bit of fatty stuff like nuts, seeds, or avocados.
Right, right. So what would you consider, just your opinion, what is the worst food combination that you would just tell somebody, absolutely not, do not do that?
Probably like, you know, watermelon with nuts, like fat with melons. I wouldn't really recommend that. Most people get a pretty bad bellyache from that. And then otherwise, yeah, like the sweet fruit acid combo. You know, some people, you know, like I've had a pineapple banana smoothie, which digests fairly good if the pineapple's really sweet. And that kind of brings into the equation, like, that again, it's not completely black and white. If you have a really, really ripe, sweet pineapple, that's going to be a little different than a lemon or a really sour pineapple that's a little bit underripe. It's going to combine a little bit differently. Even with mangoes, if you have really sweet mangoes, they're going to combine really good with bananas. If the mangoes are really tart and sour, they'd actually probably be better with oranges. And they might still be okay with the bananas, but they're not going to digest as smooth as a sweet, ripe mango.
You know, it's funny that you say that, because yesterday I went to Jason's Deli to eat, and I have I brought my own salad dressing with me, and so I went and got my salad and everything, and they have the the walnuts and the cranberries and the, you know, the little nuts and stuff that you could put on, sprinkle on top, and I ate that, and then guess what I had? Watermelon. Yeah. Afterwards. Yeah. But now you're telling me watermelons and nuts are a bad combination. I probably shouldn't have eaten that.
Well, I mean, it's not that you shouldn't have, but it may lead to, yeah, some gas and ferment and not feeling quite as good as you possibly could. And I mean, the way I look at it too is like, I mean, you know, I spend good money on food, and I have a finite amount of energy, and I want to streamline that. You know, I want to make sure the money that I spend on food is well digested and well used, and I want to make sure the energy I spend on digestion, you know, is as easy and quick as possible, rather than taking longer to get less from it, right? So to me, that's one of the reasons why I still definitely observe food combining, not necessarily as strict as if it's a law, but I to the very most part use it. And, you know, like anything, the better you are in knowledge about something, the more you can kind of bend things and not really get major consequences from them, right? But another precept of food combining that can be really, really beneficial, and this simplifies it for a lot of people, is, you know, mix foods together that are of similar water content and similar predominant flavor. So that would just basically tell you, like, you know, I mean, you wouldn't mix together a lemon and a banana because one's really watery and sour and the other one's more dense and sweet. And following up on that would be starting with the most watery foods first. So if you wanted to have, you know, watermelon and then later have some mango, then after that have salad with some nuts and seeds, that's going to digest way better than if you had the salad with nuts and seeds and followed it up with mango and watermelon. One of the key concepts right. that I read in that Fit for Life book, which very interestingly was written by two individuals, Harley and Marilyn Diamond, that were also mentored under T.C. Frye. And T.C. Frye mentored Doug Graham as well. So my biggest influences were both mentored by T.C. Frye. But one of the key components of that book talks about ditching dessert and eating fruit first. You know, a lot of people eat fruit as a dessert, or a lot of people just eat desserts in general. But in terms of digestion, this is, you know, definitely can cause issues. And if instead we get the super simple to digest fruits in first on an empty stomach, always best on an empty stomach, that will digest really well and quickly, give us lots of simple carbohydrates and vitamins and minerals and hydration. And then we're much more prepared to have the heartier stuff afterwards.
You're a pretty active cat, man. Do you find with all the fruit that you eat, do you find yourself having to drink more or less water? I mean, do you feel like you get most of your water from your fruit content, or do you have to drink a lot of water?
No, I depending upon, you know, the season and how active I am, how much I'm sweating, and, you know, if I'm outside, and even what types of foods and fruits I'm eating, it varies. You know, like I've had months where I literally had a swallow of water, you know, and throughout the whole month. And then there's been other months where I'm drinking a liter or two per day. I would say on average, I usually drink between like 250 mils to 1,000 mils, so like a quarter liter to a liter of water a day. And most often that's when I wake up, or if I'm at the gym or like sweating a ton, then I have water, because, you know, I mean, we need a certain level of cellular hydration in order to efficiently digest and absorb the water from fruits, because sugar requires water to be absorbed. So, you know, I always like to mention this, because sometimes people think like, oh, I'm thirsty, so I'll just have, you know, like a juice. And in reality, we'd be much better off to have some water first to quench your thirst when you're thirsty. And then when you're not thirsty, eat food, you know, rather than eating food for your thirst.
You know, I honestly can say that if I'm hungry and thirsty at the same time, I think I could eat an entire watermelon by myself. Oh, there's nothing better.
I just had a watermelon right here too. And I mean, if you've ever experienced that sensation after eating watermelon, I know a lot of people have, of kind of having like a burning in the pit of your stomach or along your spine, often called, have you had that before?
Yes. Yeah,
and that's often referred to as melon belly. And, you know, I've heard various reasons why it may take place, and I haven't heard anything that is super scientific, so don't necessarily need to go there. But essentially, it's kind of a shock to the nervous system, taking in more sugar than the body's able to deal with at that moment, because it's so high in water and just easily and quickly absorbed. But one of the ways to combat it, one of the ways to make it much less likely that you will experience that, is one, being hydrated before. So if someone's slightly dehydrated and they eat watermelon, then they're much more likely to experience that burning sensation. Other things that you can do to prevent that would be get some exercise first, so you actually create demand in your muscles and in your cells for, you know, regenerating and resupplying the glucose or the glycogen stores. Otherwise, to eat slowly and consciously, because if we just make 2 liters of watermelon juice and drink it back quick, we're much more likely to get that melon belly. And then, of course, be hydrated. And some people say that if your chromium levels are low, then you may run into issues with that as well. But the biggest things I've found is, you know, to make sure that you're actually hungry, to eat it on an empty stomach, slowly, deliberately, and have some water first. And I also actually find citrus really helps too. If I put some lemon, lime, pineapple juice, or orange juice with the watermelon, then it just digests way smoother, and I'm much less likely to get melon belly.
Wow. You know, you were talking earlier, simplicity, the simplicity of nature. It seems complicated what you just said, but if you think about it, that's absolutely 100% the most simple outcome that you could have.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the reasoning behind it, that's so funny. Do you, when you juice your melons, do you, like your watermelon, do you juice the rind and all?
You know what? I don't juice very much at all. More so I just blend. So with the watermelon, I've definitely had, juiced, you know, with the rind and everything. And I do enjoy that flavor. But for a few reasons, one, you know, I mean, I'm a little bit lazy. I don't like to clean a juicer. So if I had a huge field of greens and there was more than I could possibly eat, and I had someone to do the juicing for me, I would drink tons of green juice. But barring those things, I'm just as soon to make green smoothies or otherwise just to, you know, put the orange or sorry, the red or the yellow part of a watermelon into the blender, blend it up and just drink it back with the fiber.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I like watermelon juice with the rind and beets. That's probably one of my favorites.
Yeah. That sounds pretty damn amazing. Yeah. And that'd be super iron rich too. Cause I mean, watermelon's already high in iron and so are beets, of course. It'd be really nice and sweet. That sounds good.
So and it's kind of earthy tasting too. Just a little bit. That beet is a little earthy tasting, which I like. I love it. My wife is not a big fan of it, but I do. I love it.
Mm-hmm. No, I absolutely love beets too. I like to make borscht or put them in juices. And I've even made like banana beet smoothies and stuff like that, which food combining wise sounds pretty wild, but it always digests good and feels good for me.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Do you, I know what I was going to ask you. I've heard this before. My wife has, when she eats bananas, she gets indigestion or like a feeling of heartburn. Have you ever come across that? Or?
Well, in certain, not for myself personally, but, I have heard of that. And I mean, there could be various causes and without knowing someone's personal history, you know, if they're sensitive to them or allergic or, you know, if they have GERD or some other kind of digestive issue, it's hard to necessarily say, but some things that I have definitely seen that with people that has happened with is either one, that they're eating bananas on top of other food. You know, it's really important for digestion to eat fruit on an empty stomach as opposed to on top of other food. And two, if the bananas are unripe, I've heard of that happening as well. If they're less than spotty, but yeah, without knowing more, it'd be really hard to say.
Right. I had heard, I think, Lissa with Raw Food Romance, she had mentioned that maybe either eating them too fast or they weren't ripened enough. Yeah. And that could be an issue too. So
absolutely.
I just was curious. If you had come across that. I wanted to delve off into something a little personal. So if I touch on something that you don't want to talk about, just, you know, you're more than welcome to say, I wanted to talk about your accident.
Yeah, no problem.
And if you would talk about how it happened and where you are right now.
Okay. So yeah, it was, almost a year ago. It'll be a year, the 31st of this month. This is July 3rd now, I think. And, but yeah, it was a year ago and my girlfriend and I were working out at a gym across the city. We had just finished our workout. It was like 10:30 a.m. a beautiful sunny July day, and we hopped on my motorcycle and we're just about to head home. And I remember getting on the motorcycle and driving out of the parking lot, and that's all I remember. What happened after, I've been told, because my girlfriend Camilla, she does remember everything. And apparently what happened was we were driving down the highway, really going into the city, because the gym we were at was just on the outskirt, and we're going about 60 kilometers per hour, which is the speed limit. And the light ahead of us just turned yellow, but it was at the point where it would have been way more dangerous to stop because we were pretty close to the light. And she said that there was a truck in the opposite lane coming towards us. And she said that I remarked saying, they better slow down. And then we were in the intersection and I said, they aren't. And then they hit us because they were going as a half ton truck, and we were on a 1980 Honda Goldwing, a big bike, and they were going the opposite direction, and the light had just turned yellow, and they obviously just looked up the yellow light and thought, I'm going to make this light, and turned left into us and T-boned us on the motorcycle. So we both, you know, were tossed off the bike, and the doctor's report said that our left legs were mutilated. Both of us broke our fibula and tibia, open compound fractures, and she broke her femur, cracked her pelvis, and cracked her hand, a bone in her hand, and degloved part of her hand, which means the skin was peeled back. And I tore my left quad tendon and some other lacerations to my face and my nose. And we were very lucky not to, you know, not to be dead. I mean, on the scene, I was gurgling and had blood in my mouth, and someone on the scene before the paramedics arrived turned me on my side so I wouldn't choke to death. And they actually didn't even see Camilla. She was thrown far enough off the bike that they only called one ambulance. And when that ambulance arrived, they realized that she was there too. She was partially under another vehicle nearby. And they got another ambulance, brought us in. I remember waking up in the hospital, and my first thought was it my fault? And they said, no. I'm like, is Camilla okay? And they're like, yep. And she was right beside me then, so I got to talk to her. And then she was taken off to surgery, and she had 7 hours of surgery. And then I was right after, and I had five, and both with the same doctor. And I spent 10 days in the hospital. It was very tough. She spent 40, and it's still been a recovery. I'm done rehab. I'm now doing my own rehab. I had like 6 months of intensive rehab. At one point it was 6 hours a day, 5 days a week. And she's still in it right now, but she's a little bit less time because she has had a second surgery to help fix her fibula. But we're both doing a heck of a lot better. It's been an amazing journey that could be an entire podcast in itself for sure. But it's been major lessons, and you know, it is amazing, but I can honestly say I wouldn't change a thing. You know, it's brought us closer together. It's been an amazing process, and it's brought me even more into contact with myself and what's important, and faith, and just gratitude for being alive and for being able to walk still and being able to do things I love, even though I could have easily been crippled or dead.
Wow, brother. I stumbled upon you about this time last year. You had just had the accident, and I think it was because you were in everybody's, you know, thoughts and prayers, and was circling around, and that's how I come across you. And I just remember thinking, oh my gosh, I saw the, you know, your some of your stories and your pictures and you know, the videos, and I just, you know, I was praying for you and Camilla. You know, I was just worried to death that that it was going to be worse than it was, but thank God you guys made it through. And I'm telling you, it was impressive. It was impressive to watch you guys. I love watching you, you know, eating your little fruit basket there, you know, and the smile on your face. It had just happened, dude. Your face is all scratched up, and I thought, man, look at this cat. He just had an accident, you know, a serious accident, but he's got a smile on his face, and it just, it drew me in, and I've been hooked ever since.
Bless you, brother. I appreciate that. You know, and it's amazing, but, and I actually haven't said this to anyone but Camilla yet, but the first few weeks and months after the accident in some ways were easier than the months that came after that, you know, because in the beginning it was like, I'm so damn lucky to be alive. And, you know, truthfully, the universe gives you what you want. You know, like I was in a way, I was asking for a break, you know, like I had been so busy from festival to retreat to festival to project to this and that. I was like, I just want to chill out and watch Star Trek and just have a break. And well, it turned out a little different than I would have probably picked. But at the same time, I got that break, and both of us too. She wanted to kind of have a break, and you know, we wanted more time together. It would have been 3 days later after the accident that I would have started traveling, and she would have went back home, and who knows what had happened for sure, you know, when we would have seen each other next. So it all turned out amazing. And you know, we had that time, and it was like, you know, the bubble just got a lot smaller. All of a sudden it was just like, I just got to focus on healing and breathing and not necessarily what I'm putting out there as much. And the challenge now has been just finding that balance and reestablishing a new balance too, like really respecting the time I need, and I've created new routines, and I'm going to the gym way more consistently, and just finding that balance between giving myself everything I need and also at the same time feeling like I'm really connected to my passion and purpose and you know, with the desire to actually put things out there as much as I possibly can without creating stress or taking away from the other things, other patterns that I've created in my life.
Did the doctors give you any kind of prognosis as far as what the time frame that they felt that you would be back on the track again? And do you feel like that, you know, you've exceeded that and moved a little faster due to your lifestyle and the way you look at life?
Yeah, you know, I think, I mean, I know my PT, for example, he was like, man, if everyone was like you, my job would be a dream, you know, like actually someone who wants to do the rehab and who treats themselves great and isn't looking for every excuse to try and go eat something for instant gratification, you know. So my surgeon, he said that 8 to 12 months until we'd be back to, you know, basic 100%. And I say basic 100% because I'm definitely there. I'm like, as far as, you know, the average person rehabbing, I've exceeded, like, I mean, in my rehabilitation, they're like, you know, most people don't do these things. We're trying to be creative and give you yoga postures and be lifting, you know, like, you know, I was doing different lifts and stuff like that, which were way higher than they would typically be rehabbing someone through. But I consider myself an athlete. I mean, for me, 100% is when I can jump down a flight of 12 stairs and feel like not hurt myself and not be afraid to jump down a flight of 12 stairs, you know? So for me, I'm at like, you know, probably 85, 90%. But in terms of rehab, I was, you know, kicked out and told you're good a couple months ago, you know? So yeah, I think have exceeded and will continue to. I think I'll only grow stronger. And in fact, that's another reason why I feel grateful for the accident, is it just really pinpointed for me the importance of routine and the importance of strength training and doing certain movements like balance and squats and different things that I've done in the past, of course, but they were a weaker link. And I mean, I fractured my back also 13 years ago, and it's been an on and off trouble. Whereas at some times I actually felt like Yoda hunched over and messed up from it. But since the accident, and being way more regular at the gym, my back is better than it was before the accident, you know? So I feel stronger and I feel much more rooted in myself and in my own practices, and also just more determined to do what it takes to be even stronger and more balanced, you know, in the years to come than I am now. So when I'm 40 and 50 and 60, I'm in way better shape than I ever was.
And Camilla, how is she doing? Okay. She healing pretty.
Yep.
Pretty
she's well? Doing great. She had, she had one bump along the road with, her fibula kind of giving her issues, as well as, the plate that was put in her tibia was, you know, giving her issues as well. But she just recently, 3 weeks ago, had a surgery and the plate taken out and the, fibula fixed up. And, you know, she's went back to using crutches, but now she's not using crutches. She just has to have a boot. And in another week, she'll be taking that off and finishing rehabilitation. And, you know, it's been a long road. You know, it feels like right now it feels like it has been pretty quick in some moments, but, you know, years of quite a while to be in pain and learning how to walk again.
Wow. Just tell her we're thinking of her, man. And both of you, we're praying and thinking of you, brother. That's
thanks,
incredible.
Brother. Appreciate incredible. That. I definitely will pass the love on.
Good deal. Good deal. Lastly, I wanted to touch on, I know that these festivals, you mentioned them quite a bit. They play a big part of your life, and you go and you speak, and you've been to several of them. I think you said you missed one last year. That was the first one you've missed in a while.
Yeah.
And so talk about the importance of these festivals and the types of communities that meet at these places. And also, if you don't mind, do you have anybody that comes to these festivals that aren't like-minded, that are not maybe vegan or raw vegan? Have you had any that show up there?
Yeah. Awesome. Absolutely. Yeah. I feel really blessed. You know, I've been to probably nearing 20 festivals now all over the world in the last decade. And, they're just a blast. You know, it's just, we're like-minded people with similar aspirations and similar worldviews, or at the least commonalities of health and, you know, fruit and vegan based living come together. And, you know, it's amazing. Cause, you know, like, I mean, I'll admit for myself, I've been doing this long enough that I don't really have much of a feeling of needing to be in defensive mode or anything like that. But I do recognize in the beginning when I was into this lifestyle, I felt like I was on guard, because if someone had asked me a question, I'd have to answer, or I felt like I needed to, or, you know, people would make comments and it'd actually get under my skin a little bit, you know, like buying bananas and they'd call me a monkey and I'd be like, oh God, you know, they called me a monkey. But, you know, when you're at these festivals, all that's gone, and, you know, everyone just feels really happy and connected and there's no explanation needed. And, you know, everyone shares their own personal experiences. And then there's, of course, generally leaders or, you know, people who've been doing this for a longer period of time, you know, with experience, who are sharing from the stage and sharing ways to make it just that much easier on yourself. Cause, you know, sometimes it can be just the littlest things. And like we were talking about before, just like coming back to simplicity and, you know, having the confidence, you know, because like you said, you know, like, you know, if you have that sense of confidence, if your mind is on your side, it's going to create a much different reality than if you have a lot of doubt in your mind. You know, you can be on the best diet in the world, but if you're doubting it every moment and you're not sure and you think fruit might be bad and you're probably missing something. Well, you're going to experience ramifications from that. But these festivals put you in a place where, one, you're with other people who've been doing it, and some of them who've been doing it for decades and decades and decades. And two, you're getting education. So you're actually learning how to be confident. You're learning, you know, the nuances that make the difference between somebody who is doing it long term or who falls off and has, you know, some justification for it. And beyond that, the food is amazing. There's a lot of things other than just food. You know, there's the all the social games, and, you know, there's yoga and times on the lake and meditation and fitness classes and, you know, lifelong friends. And it's the time of your life. You know, there's so many people who come on these festivals and at the end are just like, oh my God, you know, that was the best time ever. I can't wait to get back together with my fruit family. And some of them end up, you know, forming relationships and moving and doing a whole bunch of other stuff. But, you know, all in all, it's just a really sweet, connective adventure into health and into yourself and finding ways to, you know, embetter yourself and embetter the planet.
Yeah, I can't wait till we go to our, we haven't been to one, and I'm so excited to get to go to one. I just had a, work is a little crazy right now, so I'm just trying to find the time to do it. And we're going to go. We are going to go. Have you had anybody that you know of that's come to the fruit festival that doesn't necessarily follow the vegan lifestyle?
Yeah, absolutely. And even my retreats and stuff too. You know, I mean, there's people who, you know, they come because they're invited, you know, like husband, wife combos, boyfriend, girlfriend combos, friend combos that, you know, one of them is interested in it and they would like their, you know, significant other or their friend to be introduced to it. And, you know, so that happens. And otherwise there are just people who see it online and are curious, you know, and they're the most welcoming environments. Like, it's not like a, you know, a fruit club where you have to be, you know, raw for 6 months before you get in there. It's, you know, most of them have different levels of, different classes and different speakers talking on different subjects, from like the super basics to, you know, the more advanced nutritional aspects. Right. So they are festivals for everyone. And there are people actually at Woodstock. I know there are people that come there year after year after year. And it's just kind of like their fun time to get together and have like a lighter week of eating, just basically like a cleanse, you know? And I mean, to me, that is one of the beautiful kind of things about a raw food lifestyle, is like, it doesn't have to be forever. It's just the more of it you put in, you know, the better you're going to feel, and the more you get used to making meals of and understanding the science and the practical kind of aspects of eating more fresh, ripe, raw, organic fruits and vegetables, the more likely it's going to grow on you and with you. And I do want to briefly mention too that, you know, I'm going to the UK Fruit Festival later this month. I'm also going to the Canada Fruit Festival early August. And then after that, the Woodstock Fruit Festival in later August. And I have a coupon code for all of those. It's just banana. And you can get like 10% to $100 off any of those festivals. Woodstock, if you've never been there, you get $100 off. All the other ones, you have a discount. And in fact, for the next, when is this going to be launching, by the way?
Next Wednesday. Wednesday.
Okay, yeah. So until the 14th of July, I have a coupon banana for the Canada Fruit Festival, and that gives you $25 off. But if anyone goes to the festival, uses my code and messages me a screenshot of the receipt showing they're going there, I'll send them an extra $100 out of my pocket and give them a free t-shirt, a free Canada Fruit Festival Peace, Love, and Seasonal Fruit t-shirt. So if you want to take advantage of that, do so and have the fun time of your life out in BC. That'll be amazing.
Yes. Yes, if anyone's hearing this, or anyone that wants to go that is hearing this, please, yeah, take Chris up on that. That's going to be the time of your life. I've heard everybody that I've heard that has went to these fruit festivals said that it is a life changing experience, and they can't wait to go back, and they will go back to every one of them. So it's great. Well, brother, again, I cannot believe that we sit here and talk this long, man. It just feels like we were just two old chums chatting, brother. I thank you so much for
doing
this. Absolute
pleasure, man. I feel the same way. And, you know, I hope to be able to connect and chat and meet up at a future fruit event or otherwise just out and about somewhere, and always happy to come back. You know, it's always a pleasure to spread the sweetness and easier ways, simplicity to just, you know, reach your highest heights and be more connected to self and others.
Well, for anyone out there who wants to find Chris with Raw Advantage, and I'm gonna let him tell all the social media outlets and websites and books and things maybe that he wants to mention. But let me tell you what, if you find him, if you haven't found him and you find him, you will not be disappointed. Please check out his stories. His stories are the best.
Thanks, man.
I scroll through to the left. If you're not on there, I'm scrolling looking to see if you've posted something new. Because I have to watch you play with your cats. It's the highlight of my day, dude. I'm serious. I love watching your posts, your stories. They crack me up.
Bless you, brother. I really appreciate that. I mean, I have a lot of fun. You know, it's funny because all of the different social media outlets, you know, and I am on all of them, the Rod Vantage, and like at the Rod Vantage on Instagram and Snapchat and Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn and Pinterest and my website, The Rod Vantage. I'm everywhere. But every single one of them I resisted, truthfully. Like, people had to push me into it and say, like, you need Instagram. Like, just do it, you know. And I was resistant, but each one of them I found some joy and some fun out of, and especially, truthfully, Instagram. Like, I love doing the stories. It's really fun because when I first started doing YouTube a decade ago, I filmed everything, man. Like, I used an iPod Nano, and I would film like every single day. And at the end of the week, I would take all my footage and condense like 3 hours of footage into a 10, 15 minute video. And, you know, slowly that just started to be way too much. So I started doing more kind of topic based videos that I would just film in one go. And years passed, and that's kind of what I got used to. And then Instagram and Instagram stories and Snapchat, I guess, first came out. Snapchat stories came out. And I was like, man, this is just like going back to those early days where I can just share all the fun and silliness and show more of just my silly side and not need to edit anything, really. I mean, of course, like, I like to put hashtags and put some GIFs or emojis or whatever. But for the most part, it's just, you know, what's going on, what's fun, what could be helpful, what I'm excited about. And I love to share it, man, because, you know, I think the things we're abundant in, we share, and everyone's abundant. And I just feel very abundantly blessed and want to share as much as I can, whether it's kitties or raw recipes or excitement around skateboarding or X, Y, and Z.
It's infectious, my brother. It's infectious. If they wanted to grab a hold of your books or your shirts and your apparel, your merchandise, where do they need to go?
TheRodVantage.com. I just recently updated the website. And you said this week this will be coming out, hey?
It will be coming out next Wednesday.
Okay, so yeah. So yeah, TheRodVantage.com is brand new, updated. Got a lot of fun stuff in there. And, you know, tons and tons of articles, over 60 recipe videos that are all free. And, of course, lots of books. And, you know, the backbone of my books being the 101 Frickin' Rawsome Recipes I mentioned. Its next book is called 50 More Frickin' Rawsome Recipes. And then my low-fat raw gourmet book, TRA Retreat Treats, they're all set at like $9.95. But if somebody's broke and they can't afford it, then they can just email me and we can always find something out. I have those by donation as well. And all the rest of the books are, you know, moderately priced. And, you know, they're my babies. They're some of my favorites, like Frickin' Rawsome Pizza. You could be eating raw vegan pizza that beats most vegan or cooked pizzas out there, you know. And it's just a joy to spread these things that have lit me up, and I really enjoy and love to share with others.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Your pizza recipes are incredible. They're beautiful. Beautiful. Thanks,
oh, they're beautiful. Fun to create.
Well, with that, my friend, I bid you adieu, my friend. I thank you so much for coming on again. And, you know, please give Miss Camilla a hug and tell her we're out here thinking about her, praying for her, and wishing nothing but the best for both of you.
Appreciate it.
And yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely.
I appreciate you too, man. So, thanks so much for having me on and for doing what you're doing, spreading this info out and highlighting different people. You know, it's a mission of love, and it's a journey. And, you know, all of us together, we help share all of our highlights and all of our, you know, all the things we feel abundant in again. So I just feel very blessed to be here with you and to be sharing with everyone today.
Absolutely. Absolutely, my friend. Well, I thank you again. And we'll talk soon. We'll talk
Sounds
again,
good, man. I'm down.
All right, brother. All right, brother.
You
be blessed.
Too. Much love.
Wow. I mean, just wow. What a great interview. I knew that Chris would not disappoint. He is an absolute treasure of information. A great, great human being, a precious soul, and a wealth of knowledge, just an absolute wealth of knowledge. So, And you know, the fact that he took the time out of his busy schedule to come in and sit down and talk with me just speaks volumes to his commitment to spreading the word. I can't thank him enough. Cannot thank him enough. So, you know, he has a fruit festival at the end of this month he has to plan for. He has two more fruit festivals after that. Then he has his Costa Rica retreat coming in at the first of next year, 2020, in February. But in the meantime, he has Miss Camilla, who is trying to heal. She is still going through therapy. God bless her. Praying for her for a quick healing. He's still healing as well, even though he's through with his therapy, but he's still healing. So yeah, he has a lot on his plate. And the fact that he came in and talked was great. Well, that being said, I hope everybody enjoyed the interview as much as I did recording it. Yeah, come in and check out the next interview. It's going to be a good one. I believe we're going to be interviewing Miss Linda Maris. She's got a great story of self-healing, and I can't wait to talk with her. So with that being said, everybody, I hope y'all have a great day, an even better week. Take care, y'all, and make good choices. Make good choices so you have good consequences. All right? So be good. God bless. Peace out.